The Weekly Long Box is brought to you this week by Handy Holder. Do you have a tablet device? What if you were to accidentally drop it on the floor and break it? With Handy Holder, you would never have to worry about that again. Visit hand, the letter E, holder.com to learn more about the world's best universal tablet holder.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 40 of The Weekly Long Box. I'm Todd, along with Leonard. How you doing today, Leonard?
I'm doing okay. It's a hot day here.
Very hot. It's always hot where we live, though.
Yeah.
So much... What?
It's one of those days where it's not hot enough to have the air conditioning on, but it's too hot for anything else.
See, I can't have my air conditioning on, or it destroys the great sound of this podcast. So I have to keep it much hot in here. Do anything interesting over the weekend?
No. There was a wrestling out in the Midwest that I couldn't go to because of super secret science work that needed to be done back home. But now we're in the home stretch toward our big show of the year in Easton, King of Trios for Chikara. That's a nice little 3-day weekend, you know, the short jaunt to Easton, Pennsylvania. I'm very much looking forward to it. It was just a lot of time with the... Home with the man, he's doing his things, walking, running, talking, doing his whole thing. It's almost as though he's growing up before our very eyes.
Oh, that's so adorable. I hope to see him before he's all grown up again.
Certainly. So how about you? How was your weekend?
Me, I've just been organizing a bunch of trains from my grandfather's collection to figure out what we're doing with them. And I was saying the other day on Twitter, I'm like, man, I have no idea even where to begin with trains. So I feel sorry for whoever gets a hold of my collection when they're done. I don't even know where to begin with all this stuff.
Well, I couldn't even imagine with trains, but isn't there like a couple local train shops in our area that maybe you can take some stuff to and just say, hey, help me out with this?
Yeah, there is. There's a few like downtown and stuff like that, but it's just that I might be easier to just bring somebody to the collection because there's just so many different cars and like little houses and stuff like that. It's really cool, you know, but like I said, it's beyond me. Like, you know, to get a guide or go on eBay and do every car to figure out what they're worth and stuff like that would just be crazy.
You could put them in the paper shop. That's always an option.
Yes, it is. I love the paper shop. You can get anything in there, I think.
The paper shop was Craigslist before Craigslist was cool.
Yes, Craigslist changed everything. But you know what? We have a lot to talk about today in news. We have a book that was near and dear to your heart, I know, gets canceled. Are you going to be okay?
I'm going to be okay. I think it was kind of imminent, but we'll get into it with the news. Yeah.
I think we should just have a segment every week called Shakeups in Comics with you know, creative teams at both companies this time. We have some movie news. And we also have two updates on two of the bigger Kickstarter projects. And I'm really starting to get into Kickstarter. I'm loving this idea. I'm late to the party, but, you know, I love it.
You're never late to the party when it's Kickstarter. It's still in its infancy stages. But, I'm interested to see hear your take on what's been going on with the one that you contributed to. And maybe if the bug has bitten you in the last 7 days to contribute to another one. But we'll get into that, I think.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about what we read last week. We have a lot of crossover, most of the crossover books, and also Wonder Woman. There was a big going to doing at the end of it that we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I'm not reading Wonder Woman, but this is definitely something that's in my, I guess it came into my sphere of influence, if you will, just over the last couple of days. And don't worry, if you didn't read Wonder Woman number 12, when we get to that, we'll kind of give you a little bit of a warning. You know, we'll shark alarm, raise the black flag to let you know to skip ahead a little bit there.
And just a quick question, do you even know what it is?
Yeah.
Okay, just check in. I didn't know if I was going to be surprising you, too.
No, I know what it is. I didn't read the book, but I know what it is.
And also what we're looking forward to this week, and it is a super small week for me. I don't know about you. With your triplicate forms, you should know, though.
You know, it even things out. You know how we talk on here, like, week two is always like a big week for me, and then this month, for some reason, week two wasn't so big, but week three mm-hmm. was. This is one of those few months where the 5-Wednesday month has kind of like evened things out, where I almost have the same amount of books every week, except for next week. Next week because that's that fifth week and it's a bunch of annuals. And of the annuals, I think I'm only getting one of them. But that's like, we're talking a week in the future. We're talking about what's coming out this week. But I got a lot of stuff, but there's one particular book that I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah. And we're also going to talk about the Twitter question, which I have to admit was an interesting Twitter question. It's who has the best facial hair in comics? And
yes.
I was almost not going to take this one seriously, and then I decided to take it seriously.
I took this one deadly serious.
Well, I know you're serious as a heart attack most of the time.
That's right. Negative fun.
Negative fun. You're the best.
But with me, usually what will happen is a lot of times on these questions, there'll be one answer that comes right out to me, immediately jumps to my forefront that I'm going to choose. And then I see a bunch of options like, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good one. And then like I'll see other people like mention somebody else and this one. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm going to change my answer. And I'm like, nope, my original answer is too good. I can't change it.
It took me a while to come to mine, and I'm sticking with it. I'm definitely sticking with it.
All right. Well, we'll dive into that toward the end of the show. Where do you want to begin with the news?
Let's get it out of the way so you're not crying much, is the book that you love that got canceled.
Yes. Possibly the best team book that Marvel has been putting out for the last 2 or 3 years. Avengers Academy is coming to an end this upcoming November. I think a lot of people who read that book kind of knew it was coming to an end. It had been floating around the same sales number for about the last year. They've been double shipping the book like mad over the last 18 months, where it's been like 2 issues a month, like steadily, and which is fine because it's a great book. Comixology, I know, had a sale on it just about a couple days ago. Hopefully some of you folks got a chance to check that out to see how good this book is. Now, all hope is not lost because Christos Gage has both said that just because this book is ending doesn't mean these characters are going away and doesn't mean that he's not doing something upcoming for Marvel. So hopefully they're just putting a new whitewash on this book, you know, maybe giving it a new number one, whatever it is, he's still on it, or maybe the characters are going somewhere else. Into good hands. I just want to see these characters go into good hands. And Christos Gage has been the best hands, but I'm just sad to see this book end. And again, it had a good run, 40 issues, you know, not so bad. Can't complain about that. In a day and age where, like, most books are lucky to get, like, 8 to 10 issues, for that to hang out for 40, just like us, I have to doff my cap to them.
I have to, too. It's been a solid book all the way through, you know, great. And I hope, like you, that they do something new with it, put a new twist on it, you know, for the Marvel now. But it's been one of those books that just was solid all the way through. And I couldn't recommend more to people. It's in my little group, like, you know, people I know, they all seem to love it. And there's a couple of people that are just really sad that it's going away. Christos Gage, I'm with you. You know, one of those writers that whatever he's doing, I'll at least give it a try, no matter what.
Right. I think what we need to do is we need to mail something to Marvel to get them to keep this book going.
That's what,
like,
we should do.
Like,
I don't know.
French toast or sausages or something. I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
Breakfast item is going to convince Marvel to continue this book.
I was thinking more something like hazardous waste for the character, hazmat. You know, that
yes.
would be great. You know, not going to break any laws by mailing hazardous waste through the mail.
Right. Well, again, it's kind of in that similar vein. I think if we just filled envelopes up with sausage gravy and mailed that to Marvel, I think that would send a message.
I think that would send a message to anyone
yes.
that you sent that to.
Yes, an envelope full of sausage gravy. So, there's been a lot of creator shakeups going on. I think the DC ones are a little bit more concrete, set in stone of things, people leaving, people coming on to books.
Yes. The big one I think is going to hurt the most is Aquaman.
Yes.
Aquaman, Ivan Hayes is leaving, to go to Justice League. I guess I don't know if that's concrete yet.
Well, there had been speculation that come this December, January, Jim Lee was definitely leaving the book. And the forerunner to take over the book was going to be Ivan Hayes. Now that the word is coming out that not only is Ivan Hayes leaving Aquaman to go to Justice League, but also Geoff Johns is leaving Aquaman as well.
Yes, and I don't know how long Aquaman will be for this world until we get a creative team on that. I think it's really cool that, like, Ivan deserves Justice League, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, yeah.
After Jim Lee, there's nobody else that I can go at DC right now that deserves that book more. He's shown that he can do a team book, giant characters, you know, the whole Blackest Night thing. His art is beautiful. He can do, you know, more issues in a year than Jim Lee, so you don't have to worry about that. I think like 10 issues, 9 issues for Ivan I've seen, and I think that'd be great, and it'd draw me back to the book.
Right, and I would definitely give that book another whirl with Ivan back on it. And again, of course, depending on who's going to take over on Aquaman, those are going to be some big shoes to fill, because Johns and Heiss have been the backbone of that book. They made Aquaman cool again.
Right. I still, you know, take umbrage with that sometimes. I'm like, people forget about Peter David, even though it was 20 years ago. yeah, they did. They brought Aquaman to the forefront, and it's going to be a tough sell without Geoff Johns and Ivan Hayes, unless, you know, like we said, there's a big name on it. I'm willing to give it a try, whoever it is. I've tried every incarnation of Aquaman, good or bad, since I've been reading comics. Whoever it is, they're going to get at least a couple issues out of me.
Right, and like I said, unless it's somebody just god-awful, like if it's another one of these, like we talked at the shop, I think a week or so ago, when they had said that Tom DeFalco was going to be doing a 2-issue fill-in on Nightwing coming up soon, and I got nothing against Tom DeFalco. You know, I'm sure he's a nice guy, and he's written a lot of good comic books. I haven't read any of them, and I don't know how I'm going to feel about him writing that Nightwing book. I'm sure it'll be just fine. But if, like, they announce, like, one of those type folks taking over Aquaman, like, they should just save themselves the trouble and just cancel the book.
Yeah, they really should.
Like, if they can't get somebody of the Geoff Johns caliber or slightly below to take that book over, they should just cancel it when Johns and Heiss leave.
I kind of agree. I'm the same way with you. I know that Rob Liefeld talked about leaving DC after a certain number of issues, so I'm hoping he won't get it. He'd be one of them, bam, done. But I don't know. Maybe I would love to see a Rob Liefeld Aquaman. But no, because I remember when Geoff Johns left, like, Hawkman.
Mm-hmm.
That book just, like, languished after that.
Keith Champagne who took over for him?
I want to say, I was talking with somebody today, I want to say it was actually Jimmy Palmiotti and Justin Gray took over when he left. And, I mean, they weren't the names that they are now, like, back then. But it was all right, and then it just slowly, you know, got, you know, worse and worse. And then I became a Hawk Woman book.
Right.
Hawk Girl. And by then, you know, Howard Chaykin was doing the art, which Howard was still good at the time for me on that. And then, you know, they just had to cancel it.
I know also when Johns left JSA and James Robinson took it over, I know that was kind of like the death knell of that book as well. So Geoff Johns is a tough act to follow.
Yes, he is. Not many books after he left kept none of them kept the sales that they had before. Booster Gold, a bunch of them. I could go down with Flash, you know, Wally West Flash. I don't want to bring that up and make you sadder.
Ugh. Yeah, again, I love Francis Manapul's art, but just trying to follow in the footsteps of Johns as a writer on that book, you know, that's, and again, I know that DC's got a, you know, you got it for Barry, and they want Barry to be in the consciousness, and, you know, I think maybe I would forgive the book a little bit more if it was Wally, but then again, I don't know if I would, but yeah, DC, if Johns is leaving Aquaman, nothing has been made official yet, this is all just purely speculation, but if he is leaving Aquaman, they really need to get somebody big on that book.
Yep. Definitely.
And now I know that Grant Morrison has also announced that he's leaving Action Comics after, I think, December or January as well. And the speculation now is that Andy Deagle is taking over the book. And that's an interesting choice. Deagle hasn't had anything by either of the big two companies in almost a year and a half. The last thing he did was Daredevil before Mark Waid took it over just last summer.
There's Daredevil before Mark Waid?
There certainly is. There's years of Daredevil before Mark Waid.
I'm always going to do that joke whenever you mention before Mark Waid on Daredevil. Go ahead.
And I'm always going to act like I've never heard that joke before.
Okay.
So, yeah, there's a lot of creative shakeups that we're going to be seeing at DC. I'm sure we'll be hearing some announcements in the coming weeks as we are in Con Season Part 2.
Second half.
Yes. This weekend is Fan Expo in Toronto, Canada, starting Thursday. So any of our listeners in the Great White North, make sure to go check that con out. It looks like a good one. It looks like what the Wizard Cons would hope they would be. Like, they've got the perfect mix of, you know, non-comic book creative people and then tons and tons of comic book creative people.
Which is what you need. You know, right. I miss the old days of most cons when it was more comic creators than you know, wrestlers and stars from TV shows.
Right, exactly. Like, I don't want Jason Priestley and Andrea, who are in Old Navy commercials, in the same booth next to, like, people who write and draw good comics.
Right. I mean, like I said, I don't mind, you know, the actors coming and anybody getting signed signatures, but it just seems like it's flopped so hard in the recent years.
Yeah, and again, Fan Expo is this weekend, and then I think two weekends after that is Baltimore, which is the one that Todd and I went to last year. I don't think we'll be going again this year, but that's one that I hope to be able to attend again in the near future.
That's one of the best cons I've ever been to. That is one of the last of the pure comic cons.
They say that and Charlotte are like the last two bastions of like pure comic book conventions. Like, no, there's like no celebrity presence whatsoever.
Right. And Charlotte's a blast.
And nary a Lou Ferrigno to be found.
Well, I don't know about Lou. I think Lou does do the whole circuit. That's one guy I'll say that almost never misses, you know, a chance to go to a Comic-Con.
Right. And I will say this to our listeners. If any of our listeners are going to Fan Expo in Canada this weekend, go hunt down the booth for Red Letter Media. And if you know Red Letter Media, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you don't, go Google them. They're the infamous folks who did the episode, the prequel reviews of the Star Wars movies, and they've done tons and tons of movie stuff on their website. Jay and Mike of Red Letter Media are going to be there doing an appearance. I can only hope Rich Evans is there. And if one of our listeners goes and can get a picture of themselves with Rich Evans and, like, tweet it to me, I'll be forever in your debt. Ooh, maybe. Because Todd and I were talking before the show. We have I have some stuff to give away. So this is just me thinking on the fly, and I don't even know if any of our listeners are going to Fan Expo this weekend, but if you're going to Fan Expo this weekend and you can meet up with the Red Letter Media guy, specifically Rich Evans, and get yourself a picture of him, you with him, and tweet it to us, then you win the contest. If nobody does it, then we're going to think of a real way for everyone to win it.
Ah. Do you even know what this guy looks like?
Yes, of course. He's the fake Mr. Plinkett.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. Take your word for it.
Yes. So we kind of got sidetracked there with me and my the way my OCD mind works. So what other news do we have to talk about?
We have some Kickstarter news.
Yes. As Todd had mentioned, he has dipped his toe into the Kickstarter waters, and he had mentioned the top of the show two of the bigger Kickstarter projects. One specifically, I think, was the biggest one at the time, was Cyberforce from Image Comics and Mark Silvestri. They just closed a week ago, actually, maybe I think this past Friday they closed on it, and they raised over $115,000, which was more than $40,000 over the goal that they had initially done. Now, the book does start in October, and there is still time to order this book from your local store. And when I say there's time to order this book from your local store, the first five issues of this book, even if you did not contribute to the Kickstarter, the first five issues of this book are free. All you have to do is order it from your local comic book shop. Do you get your comics digitally through Comixology or some other source? The first five issues are free digitally as well. But because they did so much over on their Kickstarter, they've not only added some additional rewards to the folks who had contributed, but they're going to make copies of the trade paperback free to any library in the United States that requests them, and work with charities to provide copies of the trade paperbacks for free, and also to the United States military to troops in war zone to get copies of the book to them for free because they made so much extra money. So I think it's good that that's what they're doing with the extra money.
Okay, I did not know all of that, and yes. I think that's awesome.
You got to read the notes I send you.
I read most of them. I read most of them. Yeah, come on. I can't be bogged down with reading everything. I do every other sentence. But no, like just the whole giving it to libraries, I think is really cool. The yep. military, I mean, that's this whole thing is just really awesome that, you know, people can give back. Cause I was discussing this. I wasn't sure what happens to like all the overages if, mm-hmm. you know, I just found out what stretch goals were and, you know.
Yeah.
Because I've been getting emails on that. We'll talk about that in a minute. But it's really cool. So I didn't know if, like, if you went over, they just get to keep the money. I mean, I guess you can. But either way, this is really nice to do all that kind of stuff. And to give it away free to, like, the first five issues, that just blows my mind.
Right. And I do know the other one that Todd had mentioned here, of course, would be the Gail Simone Jim Calafiore project that we talked about last week. And we will be talking about it every week for at least the next 3 weeks after this. The Leaving Megapolis, there's just 3 weeks left on it. And as of this recording, they have more than doubled their initial goal. Their initial goal was $34,000, and they are currently at $73,000 with, as mentioned, 3 weeks to go. And as Todd and I may have discussed on the show here last week or possibly in our private lives, usually where you see the biggest upswing is in like that last 24 hours.
Yeah, and when you told me that and I look at where we yep. are now, yep. that blows my mind. If it does like you say, I can't even imagine where this book could go.
And that's the thing I want to mention is Todd just said it himself, when you contribute to a Kickstarter project like this, it's almost as though you're part of the book. And you are part of the book, of course. And especially with a book of creators of this caliber. And just to see what this book has become just in the last 7 days. You know, it initially started out as an 80-page graphic novel. Now it's up to a 96-page graphic novel. And I know we had just mentioned before that they said they're at 73,000. If they get to 81,000, it's going to go from just a regular trade paperback graphic novel to a hardcover. And yes. I know, Gail, when you back the project, you get your daily updates or your weekly updates or whatever it is every time they do an update on it. And I know one of the more recent ones, Gail kind of got into a little bit more information saying that they were thinking they were going to do approximately 2,000 units. And already they're at 2,100 with, like I said, 3 more weeks to go of ordering. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be pretty big.
Right. And now, like, they were talking about, like you said, stretch goals for the hardcover. And I found it amusing that, you know, whether or not Dust Jacket or no Dust Jacket, it's actually really cool. Like, to and she and Jim were, like, asking, what do you want? Like, you know,
yep.
So that's kind of cool, too, as a, you know, the person who's funding the project, that they actually, like, look for our input because they could do whatever they want.
Yep.
You know, and I thought that was really cool. I don't know what your preference was.
Right. I just did the $50 one.
No, they were asking, I don't know if you saw that. They were asking for if they hit the stretch goal to hardcover, do you want a hardcover with a Dust Jacket or no Dust Jacket, and whichever one they got more of, they were going to win. I don't know if you decided on which one.
It happened so quick. By the time I saw it, the decision was already made that they're going to do no Dust Jacket.
Do you have a preference either way, or
I think I agree with Gail on a hardcover of that size at less than 100 pages. A Dust Jacket can sometimes be not conducive to the book for some reason. Like, I have a bunch of hardcovers without Dust Jackets that are the smaller, like 80-page, 90-page ones, mm-hmm. and then I have ones with Dust Jackets, and the ones with Dust Jackets feel like, I don't know, they just don't feel like they belong on something that small. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm anti-Dust Jacket anymore anyway on most things.
Yeah.
Just because I've had them, you know, like when you're putting them on the shelf, they can get crinkled or ruined or, you know, mm-hmm. you know, you're not hitting them in there with a hammer or anything, but you're, you know, you got a bunch of books on the shelf. Anything can happen. And a couple of hardcovers that I've been getting lately are just the glossy, you know, hardcover with the picture on it. And I'm like, it looks really nice.
Yep, so if you haven't contributed to this, you can get in as low as $9 if you just want to get the the PDF, the digital version, as, you know, $15 to $20, $15 for the actual physical book if in the United States, $20 is Mexico and Canada, $30 is anywhere else. And then I know a lot of the bigger pledges of the 250 were sold out, so they added new ones, getting some new artists to contribute 9x12 figure sketches. People like Mike Norton, Joe Prado, Adrian Cief, which I'm butchering his name, but you know who I'm talking about. So there's a tons of things in there for any price point that you would want. And yeah, it's a good project by good creators. And now the question to you, Todd, is, has this inspired you to donate or back any other projects or snoop around at any other projects, anything like that?
I've been looking a little bit, but I haven't found anything that I was interested in yet. I can imagine that I will find something eventually, but nothing right now. I haven't been all over it yet, though. I only looked at a couple of things. Other than the Glow one that you were telling me about, I don't know if that one's still going.
No, that one ended back at the beginning of July, and that one did get funded right at the last moment.
Oh, darn. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to look some more. I just haven't had a chance.
Yeah, so, and another thing I do just want to mention, I know, I don't think you had gotten in on it, the Jimmy Pamiotti, Justin Gray, Kickstarter that they did, earlier this year, Retrovirus?
No, I didn't.
Okay, if you did not Kickstarter that, it is going to be available in the solicitations for November. Ah. So, if you want to get it, that's where it's going to appear, if you did not already, fund it and get your copy on its way through Kickstarter.
That's probably something that I'll grab through, you know, solicitations.
Yes, definitely. So keep your eyes out for that. I think there was one or two other things we needed to cover in the news before we dived into comics from last week.
Yes, the Guardians of the Galaxy news?
Yes. There is tons and tons of alleged shakeups coming at Marvel. We talked about a few at DC, but right now a lot of them at Marvel are just speculation. And it's been that speculation for the last couple months on a lot of these books. But the one in particular that I think everyone kind of sort of knew was that Brian Michael Bendis was going to be writing a Guardians of the Galaxy book. Obviously, Marvel is going to put their marquee writer on a project that is going to have a movie made of it soon. So you cannot fault them for that. But I'm not 100% sure on how I feel about Bendis writing Guardians of the Galaxy. I do love those characters, so I most definitely will be checking out the first issue. And again, nothing set in stone, but I know that we will be getting a Guardians of the Galaxy book.
So you wouldn't even try the Avengers Assemble just to see, because Guardians of the Galaxy are in it now, just to see what he's doing?
No. Really? I checked out the first issue, and I didn't like it. It didn't feel like... It felt like...
I know where you're going, because I felt the same way. Go ahead.
It felt like a book that didn't matter. It felt like a book that was just being put out to, you know, cash in on the movie, which is, you know, completely within Marvel and Disney and the entire corporation's right to do, of course. But it didn't feel like, you know, and a lot of times, I read a lot of books that don't feel like they're part of any sort of grander universe or that they're part of some sort of huge continuity, but at least they're a fun read or an interesting read or a unique read or an interesting take on a character or characters. That felt like none of it.
I'm with you. I didn't like the first issue and I put it down, and then Thanos appeared in it, and I get a lot of Thanos stuff just for Thanos, so I tried it again and it was really good, and I equate it to Green Lantern when Geoff Johns first started it way back after Rebirth.
Okay.
And those first seven issues just felt clunky to me, and it felt like because they were starting up the book and then they went into 1 year later, and that's where he really started. I felt like the book came out 2 months too early. Before the movie, they wanted Thanos in it, but they had to wait two issues to put him in because they didn't want to have any, you know, oh, this is the team from the movie and they're fighting Thanos, and kind of give you that maybe he's in the movie. Spoiler alert, in case you haven't seen the billion-dollar movie. just that's the way I felt. And I feel after Thanos showed up, the book took off. Like, it was just like they were in a holding pattern or something. So, not, you know, trying to get you to read the book, you know, just one of those things that's the way I felt. I was with you the first two issues, reread them, then after that it was all action and adventure, and I had a lot of fun.
Well, hopefully Bendis brings that action and adventure to the Guardians of the Galaxy book, if he is indeed writing it, which we won't know probably at least for another 4 to 5 weeks at the latest, and then the book probably won't even be out until December anyway. However, that does lead us into some other Guardians of the Galaxy news, and that was the speculation of who the director of the movie is going to be. Some of this information came out over the weekend, and the director in question has neither confirmed nor denied this, which is part of his, part of his way, and that would be director, writer James Gunn. And I don't know how familiar you are, Todd, with James Gunn.
I'm not very familiar with James Gunn.
I am very familiar with James Gunn. I would probably say that he is probably within my top three current favorite writer-director types in the big-budget Hollywood world, and even the small-budget big Hollywood world. He got his start at Troma with such classic films as Romeo and Juliet. also ghostwriting and helping out on the writing on a bunch of other Troma movies until he got his big break in Hollywood doing the Scooby-Doo movie.
That was a classic.
That certainly was. He also wrote the Zack Snyder-directed Dawn of the Dead remake.
Love that movie.
That's a good movie. He also did Slither, if you've seen Slither.
Is that the one with Nathan Fillion and Elizabeth Banks as the big...
I've only
seen parts of that, but that was what I saw. I liked.
And more recently, just last year, he directed us. He wrote and directed Super, starring Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page of Juno, and that was probably my favorite movie of last year.
Wow, that's saying something.
Yes,
I haven't seen that one, but that's one of them that I kind of wanted to.
So he's a very interesting director. He's a very interesting writer. I'm not sure how much of the writing process he's going to be, and nothing has even been made official yet. It's just a lot of, again, speculation, but we always like to speculate here on the show. I certainly hope he gets the job, and if he does, I can't even imagine what that Guardians of the Galaxy movie is going to look like. And then even conversely, James Gunn is a very outspoken individual.
Outspoken good or outspoken bad?
Well, I'm sure if you're a Disney publicist, bad.
Oh.
But if you're someone who likes to have fun and enjoy a lot of off-color jokes and off-color remarks, then he is an outspoken individual good.
Okay.
He doesn't have a filter.
I know a few people like that.
Right, and... again, someone who doesn't have a filter and has taken a lot of, you know, ridiculous remarks at some big top brass type folks. Like, I'll never forget when the whole Rush Limbaugh, you know, Bane Capital, Dark Knight Rises stuff came out.
Which was fact, we found out later.
Right, which was fact. He tweeted during the whole thing, essentially, like, can we really trust a person who doesn't know the insides and out of Vengeance of Bane number one?
A truer phrase has never been spoken.
Right. So that's the sort of guy that we're kind of going to be dealing with. He is a comic book person. He's a video game person. He's a horror movie person. He's a sci-fi person. He's an action adventure type person. So I'm very excited and waiting with bated breath in the hopes that he gets this movie.
We'll hear the champagne pop if they announce it from, you know, Chikarison Manor.
when I saw the news over the weekend, I almost broke my no swearing rule on Twitter and swore. That's how excited I was.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. I try to, you know, because, you know, family members, people at the super secret science job see my Twitter. And, you know, I don't want to be a complete degenerate on the internet.
See, I keep it clean on Twitter only out of respect to you. That's the only reason. Because your name is associated with mine, and I want to drag you down into the filth and the mud with me.
Well, thank you very much. I do greatly appreciate that, because you are a filth monger.
Oh, I am.
So, I think we've covered enough of the news from this past week. You know, when you think there's no news, somehow... it all creeps up on you.
Yes, it does. It comes out of nowhere sometimes.
It certainly does. So where would you like to start with books that we read from last week?
Because I know you're such a fan of Sinestro, I'm going to go with Green Lantern.
Yes, Green Lantern number 12. This is one of the books that Todd and I mentioned before, a Jeff Johns penned book. And the very first thing that the very first thing that I noticed about the book, and the very first thing that really took me out of the book, just like last time when there was a fill-in artist, I think on issue 7 or 8, it really took me out of it. And this one had two fill-in artists. One Renato Guedes, and I'm pronouncing that incorrectly.
I think that was perfect. Because
yes. And the aforementioned Jim Calafiore of Secret Six and soon to be leaving Megapolis fame. While the art was good, when it's anyone other than Doug Monkey, it takes me out of the book for a moment. And I got to recalibrate my mind to read the book.
I'm with you because I found it a little jarring to read this with the art. I thought the main characters, like Sinestro and Hal, were a little off, but I felt that I really dug the zombie aspect of the book. I thought that the art worked for that better than it did normal humans and aliens. Normal aliens? Is that right? You know what I mean?
Right.
But overall, the story I thought was awesome. I didn't even know that we were getting a Green Lantern annual, but I guess we're getting annuals for everything. It's hard to keep up for me with some of them, and I'm looking forward to it before we switch over to the other Green Lantern, that whatever they're doing with that. But all in all, I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, too. A lot of the Jim – there's a specific Jim Calafiore page that is actually one of the preview pages, and they'll be up in the notes where it's the Guardians going over their plans, and the page is broken up into each of the different colored lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a bar, a rectangle going across the page. That is a really, really nice page. And like you said before, the main characters, the way he draws them, I like the Calafiore pages just because he's an artist I'm a little bit more familiar with. Getting to see what the Guardians' plan is going forward. And especially the, I guess, cliffhanger at the end of the book, which leads into the annual coming out in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That was cool.
I'm very interested to see where that goes.
Did you kind of call it early on, what it was going to say at the end?
No, I had no idea.
Honestly, as soon as I saw that he sees it earlier in the thing, I was like, I know exactly what it says in that book.
Well, I'm a dumb. I can't figure these things out.
Well, I'm telling you, I'm a futurist. I keep telling you that.
Well, the question I have for you is that with all of this starting up here with the annual in 2 weeks, the zero issues next month, and then starting in October, there's a crossover with all the Green Lantern books. Now, I know you and I, back when this whole New 52 nonsense started, we were on all, if not most, of the Green Lantern books, and I think this is the only one we're both still getting, correct?
Yes, I tried every book when the New 52 started. Mm-hmm. But then the Green Lantern, the Red Lantern books, and New Guardians, I just dropped off after a couple. So yeah, GL is the only one that I'm still doing.
So are you going to be picking up those books when the crossover starts in October?
I don't know. I know that sounds very wishy-washy. I know I'm picking up the zero issue of Green Lantern Corps, because it's going to be Guy Gardner's origin in this new universe, what they've tweaked or whatever. So I kind of want to know that as a fan of the character. So if that intrigues me and gets me back on GL Corps, maybe I'll pick that up. And depending on how it weaves in and out, I might try the other two books just to see if they're any good again during the crossover. But I don't know. It'll depend week by week what I have coming out.
I'm the same way. I'm not 100% sold on where this crossover is going. I think I'm hoping, I'm praying, since I was able to, I think part of the thing was with the Court of Owls thing, when that crossed over into every book, I was already reading 40% of the Bat line anyway.
Right.
And they did a really good job of isolating things and, making sure the main things that happen in the main books weren't hindered by what was going on in the other books. And to kind of, if you were reading those other books like Batman and Robin or Nightwing or Batgirl or whatever it was more or less just the Court of Owls touching into those things, where I think this is going to be a more full-fledged crossover. I'm hoping that I can just read the Green Lantern book and understand what's going on. But as Todd mentioned, if there are, you know, if it's a light week and one of them are out, I might pick it up.
I'm the same way. And I agree with you on, like, the Court of Owls, that it was very quick. It only touched the books, didn't ruin it. But I'm with you. I see it. I see this being, I see them wanting to lift up the other books. I bet probably failing and not failing, you know what I mean by failing, just they're not selling as well. And they're, this kind of stuff, you know, works every time to give the books a boost, at least for a little while. And then if you keep X amount of percent, you know, your sales are better.
Right. Of course, obviously, that's what every single, you know, crossover is supposed to do, but very rarely does it. Exactly. Is the problem.
And I don't know. I don't have faith in a lot of the SciGL books, but we'll see.
I think next I would like to talk about Daredevil number 17.
Okay.
All right. Now, a lot of people online were talking, saying, like, oh my god, we're getting so much Daredevil. And I didn't pick up the annual only because it doesn't fit into what's currently going on in the book.
I'm the same way. I didn't pick it up because I don't care about Clandestine.
Right. But just within the last 2 months, we have gotten, you know, it's almost on a bi-weekly schedule. Daredevil, at least at this point. And the last issue was kind of the end of the Matt getting out of Latveria story. This was kind of just like a one-off issue. It was more of a flashback tale with the Stilt Man, with really awesome art by Mike Allred. But the key thing of this is further establishing that past relationship with Foggy and Matt.
I totally agree. I call it like the Foggy and Matt times past issues, like, you know, into their thing. And that's the thing that I loved about it the most, was I thought the story was completely touching. It almost made me weep. I have to say, the punch at the end and what Foggy is doing, because they're such close friends, and the whole plot of it is really good. You know, you get into the adventure fun stuff, that was great. But these are the kind of issues that show me how great of a writer Mark Waite is. And I want to get to the art a little bit, because I know I'm probably going to take a few lumps for this. I'm not a fan of Allred in most of his books. I don't know how this worked. I loved him in this. Because I was afraid when they mentioned that he was going to be doing the FF book. I'm like, Mike Allred's not my cup of tea for what he does. It's all right. But to him doing FF and a Daredevil, I don't know how many he's going to be doing. And Daredevil, he's going to be doing a lot, or this is just a one-shot. But I was like, I don't know, just the coloring and everything. I loved him on this, and that's weird for me to say.
Now, I like the way that this was colored. It was colored a little bit different than the way his stuff usually is. But if you look at those covers, I don't know if you've seen the... I don't know if he's doing the interiors on the FF book, or is he just doing the covers?
See, I thought he was doing the interiors, but I could be wrong.
Well, I know one of the news sites, Comics Alliance to be exact, they this week have been showing the variant covers for the first couple issues, and it's just like an isolated shot of each of the members of the FF team. And with the white background and the way that those are colored, those are some of those beautiful covers, some of the most beautiful art I've ever seen.
That's interesting, because like I said, I haven't seen them, so I can't pass judgment. It's just when I've seen him do his like Madman and stuff like that, it just seems so flat and soft. I don't know, but like I said, on this he works, and this is one of those reasons that I'm just going to keep reading Daredevil. And I like if we're going to get storylines, you know, and then we go back to the Matt and, you know, Foggy stories. Because I think so far they're actually the ones that I probably had the most fun with.
Right. And, you know, I like that they're adding more to these two characters to kind of put it into light, to show the decision that Foggy has made finally after all these years to tell Matt to hit the bricks means that much more, you know?
Yes, totally. You know, like they're showing you that he, as a great story teller, he's showing you like this isn't just a, you know, a light moment. Like these guys have history, and I think he's done that perfectly.
Yes. So, you know, if Todd is saying that Daredevil is a good book and you're not already reading it, then fooey to you.
It might get the Todd nod soon.
Oh, well, there you go. I don't know when the next issue is coming out. I'm sure it's within the next couple of weeks, but definitely check it out if you're not already on Daredevil. I think we had one listener on Twitter say that, you know, I love the show and I love what you guys are doing, but I'm still not going to read anything on Marvel. And if I can convince my buddy Brian, who hates everything Marvel, to read this, then you, sir, will have no choice but to read this book.
If we have to come to your house and make you read it.
Correct. So next, the last thing that both Todd and I read would be Saga number 6.
Yes. Do you like the Saga book?
Do you? I do. I do. And again, it's not so much as a complaint per se, but it's a sadness about reading this issue. I love the art. Fiona Staples' art is awesome. I really like where Brian K. Vaughan is going with it. I love the way the story is being told. I'm interested to see where all these divergent plots are going to end up. And I like the surprise at the end, of course, who shows up on their ship. I like all the stuff with the ship that they have. I really like this book, but what were you going to say there?
No, I'm just joking around. I this book is, you know, I can't say anything bad about Brian K. Vaughan. Just the ideas that he's doing in here are different and out there, and I'm fine with that. I like the ghost nanny, even though every time I still see her, she freaks me out. You know, what's going on with the Will and the Lion Cat, and I forget what the spider chick's name was. I'm starting to just learn them. I think she was the Stock.
Yes.
The Stock. What's going on with that? I'm like, oh my God. And just like I said, the idea is like the rocket forest. I was like, that's just really cool. And I like the ship and, you know, the just Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples, like working together, doing some great story ideas with the visuals that, you know, take it home. Like I said, 6 issues in, I've loved every issue. I don't know what more I could say about how much I love this book.
Well, if there was ever a time for anyone to get caught up on this book, as I'm prone to say, now's the time. The first 6 issues are out. The collection of those first 6 issues are coming out within the next 2 weeks. And unfortunately, I get to be the harbinger of this news to our listeners. The next issue, issue 7, is not coming out until November. Yes, a little bit of an unfortunate hiatus for the book, I'm sure, just trying to get caught up on things.
And con season.
But there is no issues for the next 2 months, and if it gets them back onto a regular schedule, that's fine. But, you know, hey, that's sometimes what you get. Sometimes that you have to sacrifice punctuality for quality.
I agree, as long as it doesn't get crazy.
Yes, I agree.
That's what I'm saying. I give them the benefit of the doubt, and I could see if it got crazy, it would be a book that I would definitely try, but it would be a book that I would let sit and read all in one shot for, like, you know, maybe trade weight for it or build up the issues. But this is good enough that I'll give them 2 months, 3 months, you know, like, fine. If that's what you need to get caught up, I'm fine with it.
And as I mentioned, you know, the first 6 issues are getting collected. What you could definitely, you know, and I know Image usually does with those first collections, they keep them super cheap. So I think you can get those first 6 issues for $9.99. I think if you go through, Comixology, if you're a digital person, you can even get them cheaper. I think they're already down to $2 each. So you can get the digital comics, right now for just as cheap as the trade for when that comes out in a couple of weeks. And I did forget to mention, as I'm talking about digital comics right now, there is a digital sale going on right now in one of my favorite Image independent books, and that's Invincible. The first issue is on there for free, and it's always on there for free. I think that's one of those evergreen free books on Comixology. But the first 90 issues are on there at 99 cents each, and they also have them all collected up as well if you want to buy them as the collections. And I think the first collection, which does collect the first 5 or 6 issues, is $3. So that's a deal at, you know, twice the price.
Who's the writer on that book?
Robert Kirkman.
Haven't heard of him. I'm actually shocked we don't have any Walking Dead news today.
You know what? Walking Dead 101 came out this past week, but really, you know, it was a... Of course it was a down issue after last month's issue.
Something happened last issue?
You know, it's been a month. The trade doesn't come out until November.
Mm-hmm.
Are we safe to talk about what happened in 100 yet?
I don't know. I don't know. Because I don't trade weight for anything, so I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll leave that call to you, because you're the smarter of the two of us. I'm the more handsome one, but you're the smarter one.
That is true. I'll say we'll keep the spoilers under our hats right now for Walking Dead 100. But yeah, Walking Dead 101 came out, and it was just more of the aftermath of what happened in 100, and them kind of rallying the troops and figuring out what they're going to do next.
Mm-hmm. And Carl is even-handed as usual.
You know what? This was some of the first time we've seen some real emotion out of Carl. You know what I mean?
I totally agree. But I thought that moment was awesome. When Carl's like, he's doing his thing. He's got to. There's still one thing he cares about in this world.
So it doesn't completely quell my thoughts that Carl is beyond reproach and beyond repair at this point. There's still some good left in him.
For now.
Right. I'm sure.
Kirkman is just going to grind that away. Just going to grind it down.
I'll say this to you, Todd, when we're done with the show, and to our listeners as well. When you get a moment, go find the November solicitations for Image. They're online. You can find them on any good comic book website. Just throw into your Google machine, Image November 2012 solicitations, and look at the cover of a 104 that's coming out in November. Just look at the cover. You don't even need to read what the solicit text says. Not that they give you much outside of 10 words or less in every month's issue. Usually sometimes less than that, usually nothing. But when you see that cover, you're just going to be like, yeah, that's more or less what I expected.
I'll have to take a look at that.
Yep, definitely. So the last book that we're going to talk about here from last week is going to be Wonder Woman number 12. So, Todd, I'm going to leave this one to you as you actually read this book. And we're going to put a little note in here. This is where you can kind of skip ahead if you didn't read it and don't want to be spoiled.
To avoid Wonder Woman spoilers, skip ahead to 57 minutes into the podcast.
Wonder Woman now, 12 issues in, it's about this girl who's had, is pregnant with Zeus's baby, and Hera's not very happy about it. So it's been, Wonder Woman, because we found out that she's the daughter of Zeus, protecting this girl and hoping to protect the baby. And this all come to a head on Mount Olympus. It's her and a couple other gods against some of the other gods. And I have always said I really like this book. The baby's born, and in the Greek mythology, it always seems that the baby, the son or the children are what usurps the main god. So that's what they're worried about. But while all that's going on, some interesting stuff happens at the end. It seems that the new gods are starting to show up, because the old gods might be going away. And the last page is Orion. It looks like Orion because it's not a complete clear shot of him. But somebody comes up out of the ground and he picks up a helmet which looks like Orion's helmet. And, they're talking about betrayal, death, perhaps the fall of Olympus, depending how you look on it, a beginning of the new gods. And then there's a giant boom tube and he walks into it. And I'm of two minds on this, because I think my feelings on the new gods.
Yeah, you hate them.
I do. I think they've been other than Darkseid, maybe Orion. I have a soft spot for Mr. Miracle because of a little book called Justice League International. But other than that, I feel a lot of them are just rehashes of a lot of the stuff Kirby's done with the Eternals and then the Forever People and all the other stuff. But half of me goes, oh God, not the new gods again. But half of me goes, this is your chance. This is your last chance with me to make them cool. You have a clean slate, and I think you could do some really interesting things with them. And I can't believe I'm saying this, want to see where this is going to go.
I would be excited to see Cliff Chang doing the art on a New Gods book. I think that would be pretty awesome, because his art is so awesome.
That's one of the things about this issue that I really love is Cliff is back on it. This is one of the my pet peeves as it takes you out of GL. Cliff isn't doing, you know, too well on the numbers when it comes to how many issues he's done in a year. And he's back for this one. And I think he's – I don't know if he's doing zero and, he's off 13 or whatever, because we've already, you know, have like another fill-in artist for a month somewhere. And his he just does such cool stuff in this with the look. And I like what they're doing with Wonder Woman. It seems like, you know, the bracelet – well, everybody knows the bracelets that she wears to deflect bullets. At one point she's fighting and she takes them off. And they're like, the gods laughing at her, like, you're taking off your best, you know, defense. And she's like, no, these aren't defenses. And when she takes them off, they drop and they hit the ground. And they just, like, crack and sink into the ground a little bit. And she gets super powered. Like, she has all this energy coming out of her. And it looks like she keeps the bracelets on to, like, power her back. And just like all the stuff that they're doing with Wonder Woman, it's like I said, is one of the great, you know, fresh starts in the New 52. I know you read it and you found the book, you know, kind of boring when you tried it.
Yeah, I just couldn't get into it.
Okay. I like everything that they're doing with this, and I just think I want to see where this is going to go, and I'm interested in, you know, another issue zero, like the origin issues, and see where this storyline's going to go.
Now, this is the first time that they've tied the New Gods characters into, you know, essentially the old gods of the DC Universe and Wonder Woman. So I am interested to see this new take, to see where it goes. I wonder if they're just going to be confined to this book, or if this is going to be one of the new books that gets launched out of, like, December, January, whenever DC does their next wave and rollout of books, when they do, like, their cancellations and relaunches with this new 52. I'm interested to see who's going to be on a New Gods book. Because I think we can say it. From what we heard in Baltimore last year.
Right.
Who pitched a New Gods book and was told no.
Yeah, there was a few people like that said no, that they're not going to, we're not going to let you do that. But I agree. I think that's, you know, a sign of things to come.
Yep. I would be interested to see if that person, and again, I think we'll wait until a book gets announced maybe, but it'll be interesting to see if that person ends up writing the New Gods book, since he's the one who pitched it almost a year ago.
Right, and I don't think it's just going to stay in the Wonder Woman books. I think this is going to be something big, and I think we might see them popping up in other books, like, you know, being born. You know, like, and then you could say, like, see Wonder Woman 12 and cross it over and have them being, you know, in all these. I think that would be great.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see with these characters now back in the DC Universe, the New 52, if you will.
Right.
So I think that's all we could say about that book.
Yes.
Ending the spoiler talk there, and I'll put the little notes in there as well. What is the book that you are most looking forward to coming out this week, sir?
Because I have so little, it was a tough choice, but once again, I'm just going to go All-Star Western 12.
Just a layup this week.
Just a layup, but if I pick Iron Man, iVampire, JLA Dark, or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you know, they're all books that I've picked in the past for, you know, what I'm looking forward to. I'm just glad that I have a down week. That's, I can honestly say.
Well, you know, this is actually a perfect opportunity. You keep saying that it's a down week for you. You don't have a ton of books. This week is, I know what your reaction is going to be as I do the ramp up for this. It's the beginning of a new storyline. It's a double-sized issue. It's an anniversary issue because, you know, it's Spider-Man's 50th birthday this week.
Yes, it is.
And this is the beginning of a new storyline with Kid Spider-Man Jr., the sidekick.
Yes.
So, Amazing Spider... I kid because I love, but Amazing Spider-Man 692 comes out this week, and I'm very much looking forward to this. Dan Slott has been so good on this book over the last, you know, however long he's been on the book, quite some time. And I really like the way that the Lizard storyline wrapped up when that did 2 weeks ago. And I'm looking forward to see where this story is going to head. And, you know, I'm willing to give Alpha, the Kid Spider sidekick, or whatever his name is, the benefit of the doubt and at least read the first issue before I, you know, call him the Jar Jar Binks of the Marvel Universe.
Spider-Man Jr. Yeah.
Spied you.
Yes. I don't know. Maybe I'll pick that issue up. just so we could discuss it next week.
Yeah, you know, it's something. It's a little pricey because of the double-sized issues, so, you know, buyer beware.
Yes. We'll see. Maybe, because I think this would be an interesting book to talk about.
All right. Yes, especially someone who doesn't read Spider-Man as much as, like I do, you know?
You got me on Daredevil. Maybe you can get me on Spider-Man.
I'm telling you. You got me on All-Star Western. I'll give you that.
Wow. So we're 1-1.
You know, if we look at the tally over the entirety of our friendship, I'd say it's more even. It's more leaning on your way.
Really? That fills my where my heart would be with warmth.
Yes. Like you got me on Preacher, and that's a big one.
Really? I don't remember that, honestly.
See, I do. Of course. I remember you giving me the first trade out of the back of your trunk before you got the truck that you have now.
Oh. Okay, that I kind of remember. I used to carry good stuff around just to hand out to people.
And you're the one who inspired me to do just that, because I for the longest time would carry around good stuff. Like, there was a period of time about 3 years ago where I carried around a trade of that first trade of The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just give it to people. Like, if we just start talking about comic books and they showed any interest in The Walking Dead whatsoever, I'm like, here, take it, it's yours.
Yep. Like I said, I used to do that. I have trades that just fell apart from that.
Yep. So I think we're going to do a tally one day of all the books that you got me on. And I think it's definitely swung in your favor more. So it's just more recently, since there's been a recorded account, it looks like it's in my favor.
Yes, prehistory. Pre-Leonard and Todd history is rough.
Yeah, so just to kind of wrap things up here, we don't want to keep you too long.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the. I don't want this to be a 6-hour podcast. I know I do that all the time, and I hate that I'm looking at the clock. But I do want to get into our Twitter question from last week. And of course, if I mention Twitter, I would be remiss to say to follow us on Twitter. The show's Twitter account is Weekly Longbox. Todd is at Roker the Joker, Rowker the Joker. And I am LF Chikarison, as you would think it would be spelled. It's easier than you think. And I will do our best to have the main show account tweet out our handles toward the end of the week. And I do also, before we get into the Twitter question from last week, I do want to give a special shout-out this week to two listeners, Zeus Ramos, specifically Cusack Clone on the Twitter, and Alex Milko, which is Money Milko, on the Twitter as well. Both those gentlemen, in the last month, have listened to every episode of the show, back to back to back.
Oof, we should give them an award.
You know what? That gives me the idea. I might have them fight it out somehow over this awesome prize. That is, if nobody gets the Rich Evans picture this weekend at a Fan Expo. But that gives me an idea. Maybe we'll think about it. It's a good prize. Maybe if the prize bag is a little bit bigger, we'll split it between the two of them. But right now, it'd be an uneven split.
Ah.
I would have to be like King Solomon and rip the prize in half.
Mm. I'll have to look for some swag around my sloppy bedroom for some stuff for the show.
Like if you had an anvil or something that you can give as a prize?
Oh, I don't have an anvil. You've reopened a wound for me. I hope you're happy.
I am. I'm always happy when I rip things off of you.
Ugh, I'm anvil-less.
Yes. So our question was best facial hair in comic books. And we did get a lot that did not surprise me. Hobby Hottie on Twitter, as well as Dr. Flux, both mentioned Jim Gordon. CM Towns and Neil Jacoby, both longtime listeners, both mentioned Oliver Queen. Those were no surprises. Money Milko, who I mentioned before, mentioned Tony Stark, who the person I work with who inspired this category was very upset that Tony Stark was not the foregone winner of this selection. She was like, she goes, oh, the obvious answer is Tony Stark, but she's more of a comics, movie, TV, cartoon sort of person.
Yep, peripheral.
And then when I showed her the list of people, her head was spinning.
She thought maybe Tony Stark was the only one in comics with facial hair?
Well, I think she kind of knew, like, Wolverine would have, you know, crazy facial hair, as Jer-Bear Stare mentioned. Free Karate Chops knew listener and follower on Twitter mentioned the Mandarin, and that's a really good one. As a Cusack clone, who I mentioned before, mentioned Ming the Merciless. One of my favorite that somebody mentioned, Jason Kirk, another longtime listener, mentioned Cesar Romero's mustache when he was the Joker. He would just put the white grease paint over it.
That was awesome. I did not notice that as a kid. I honestly, I didn't. It wasn't until later. I was like, does he have a mustache?
I knew there was definitely something wrong. I just didn't know what it was.
I thought maybe it was a caterpillar or something right under his lip.
Something like that. I also would be remiss to mention here as well, the Gaunt Man, and that's with underscores between those words. He had mentioned Deadshot, but then said that with this new 52 nonsense, cool people like Deadshot and Oliver Queen were robbed of their awesome facial hair. But Deadshot did have one of the better mustaches in the business.
Yes, he did. He had there's a certain name for the kind of mustache he had, I believe.
Well, I think that's the kind of mustache that the man I chose has. But before I do mention that, I do want to also give an honorable mention to two friends of ours, both DJ, the Dooge on Twitter, and Josh Savitsky, which is Jay Savitsky on the Twitter machine. They did not say someone in the comics as a character, but they did mention Jason Aaron as the best facial hair. And he has quite possibly the most mighty beard in all of the world.
He is a hardcore bearder.
That's right. A beard that would make Luke Harper weep.
Okay.
That's right. Inside remarks, baby.
That's what we do best sometimes.
That's right. So, Todd, I'm going to leave it to you to tell me who your best facial hair person in comics would be.
Okay. Some people got it right, but on the wrong person.
Uh-oh.
They chose Ollie Queen with the mustache and the little tuft of hair on the chin.
Sure.
But it was done first and done better on Travis Morgan, the Warlord, who they looked alike so much that in an issue of Green Arrow during Mike Grell's run, writing it, that Travis Morgan came to Seattle where Ollie was living, and he kept getting beat up by people that Ollie had messed with. And it's always been said in comics that they looked alike because he drew both and he based the both look on the facial hair that he actually had at the time. So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yep. I've seen pictures of him with it and, it's pretty cool. But it looks better on Travis because he's got the white hair, and that's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, that's a really good choice. Now, I'm going to ask you to guess who Mayan was.
Okay, I have a certain kind of mustache.
One of our listeners, specifically Kevin Ford, KFord13 on the Twitter, did guess it.
Mustache.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they have a mustache, and is it big?
I'm gonna say, look at your Skype, sir.
Oh, I'm an idiot. I'm gonna go with Sinestro, yes. Maybe?
Yes, Sinestro. He's got the best mustache in all the world.
Would you say he has the most sinister mustache?
Snidely Whiplash has nothing on Sinestro.
That is true. That is true. You know what? I have to admit, when you first pitched this question, I thought it was ludicrous and beneath me. Because I am a man of honor and prestige.
Of course.
But, looking back, I have to admit this was a fun question.
Well, I try to make things as fun as possible. That's what comics should be. Comics should be fun. They shouldn't be all morose and complaining about everything. And I know we had a little bit complaining earlier on in the books and just some lamenting. But hey, we're being honest, But most of the show is positive. I'd say almost 80 to 85% of the show is positive.
We got to be honest. I mean, if I don't like something, I got to say it.
That's right. Todd, you had said that you have a Twitter question for us next week, or am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I have a Twitter question. I mean, it's not as great as facial hair, but I think it's pretty good. What is your favorite alien race in comics? Ooh.
There are lots of alien races in comic books.
There are almost too many to count.
Oh, man. I just can't say the... I just can't say Sinestro again for every answer I have, can I?
You could say his race, I guess, if that's your favorite one. But I think Sinestro's different than most of his people.
Right. He's the exception, not the example.
Yes.
So yeah, that's actually a good one. That's going to give me a lot of thinking to do over the next 7 days.
That's what this show is made to do, make people think.
Yes, yes. Listen with your ears and think while you're listening and reading, and all the senses are involved except for smell.
Yes, we were kind of like an improved Daredevil. All of them.
So, again, that is the question for next week, your favorite alien race and in all of comic books. And you know what? I think I already have mine.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. I have no idea. I just, when I was thinking this up, I was like, okay.
Well, that's a good one. I like it, though. I like it. So, I do thank you all for listening to episode 40 here of the Weekly Long Box. And for Todd, this is Leonard, and we will catch you all here next week.